This is the Hidden Killers podcast with Tony Brisky,
featuring former FBI special agent and chief of the Counterintelligence Behavioral Analysis Program, Robin Dreek.
Karen Reed and John O'Keefe, this is a tragic story any way you look at it. A man lost his life, and it seems all those who were around him who did care about him, they were friends as far as we know, and even intimate partners, but he ends up losing his life on a cold, snowy night after a lot of drinking. And now you have these two parties that are at odds with each other. Karen Reed being charged with second degree murder in this case. But a lot of people are looking at the other side as well, going, could it really have been her, considering the evidence that exists and the accounts that we've heard from some of his friends who he was drinking with that night? It's a hard one. I mean, a lot of people are taking sides. I don't want to take sides. I want to just get to the truth on this. But I mean, where do you go on something like this when maybe the person who possibly did this, if we're talking Karen doing it, really truly does not know if she did it or not? She was drunk. She made statements. She really seems to have no motive to actually have done this other than did it and then. Is the cover-up worse than the actual action itself? What are your thoughts?
Well, like you said, it's tragic. And I think it's a great example of over-drinking. I mean, this, and that's why I don't think the testimony on anyone on this one is going to be really all that compelling. It's you're going to have to follow the evidence on this. And if it wasn't for the text of the friend inside the house saying and looking up and Google searching how long does it take to someone die in cold or in the snow, whatever it was, it would be easy, I think, much easier. But that one text, that one search that was done on Google with then deleted kind of says it kind of shifted it. But at the same time, it's still looking like, I mean, they're going to have to do an analysis of the marks on his arm that he had, you know, the symmetrical hits that he had to see if he was hit by the car. They got to look under the carriage of the car. There's right there. So there's a lot of evidence to kind of look at on this. And also the traumatic fracturing of the skull, the base of the skull, you know, that's, could it be a car hit? Could it be something else? So you're going to have to follow the evidence. Cause again, these people were so drunk. I don't think anyone has an accurate memory. And so it's a rough one.
And with that being said, everybody being so drunk, then we get into the conspiracy area where, well, did everyone, if we go the other direction, if Karen didn't hit him and there was some sort of altercation at that party that night, we have to take a look and go, okay, if we're going to go down this road that something accidentally did happen or maybe purposefully happened, seems to me far more accidental is likely here. What are the odds, I guess I should say, of that group of people all being able to stay on the same page for all this time and nobody breaking, nobody saying anything else? I mean, that seems to be the point where a lot of conspiracy theories break, even if it's just a few people or if it's a lot of people. Sometimes it's hard to keep one person on the same page, more or less four or five or six different people. And the reason I think for the conspiracy mainly is because they're officers of the law. And that, you know, if used incorrectly, could cover something up. But again, it's quite a, it seems like kind of a stretch.
Yeah. I mean, referring to the blue wall, you know, blue wall of silence that people can stand behind. But like you said, the more people you involve with a conspiracy, the harder it is to do that. I think we also have to look at the arc of behavior here, as we always do when we're talking to me. This arc of behavior of this entire group is over drinking. And it's hard to have a conspiracy when I don't want to disparage anyone because we only know that she drank a lot from what was shown on the video in the bars. And, you know, what's going to happen is the prosecution and defense is going to have all the data that we'll see when it goes to prosecution. But if everyone was drinking to that at excess, you're going to have a hard time having a conspiracy with anyone. Because again, I don't think anyone has a true accurate memory on what transpired during the critical moments when he died back at that house.
One of the things that they're looking at is the data. I think that's going to tell us probably far more than a bunch of drunk people. But at the same time, it just kind of leads us up. Data doesn't show intention. Data just shows us fact. It's showing that she backed up rather fast, but that doesn't mean she's murdering someone. It means it's a snowy day and you're trying to get out of a spot, or it could mean that anyway. It could mean that you're trying to hit somebody too. But we have that little piece of data. Beyond that, it's probably really going to come down to the voicemails, I'm assuming, that she left for him. We haven't heard those yet or seen any transcripts of them. Apparently, there was some anger there. Again, doesn't mean you're going to go kill the person if you're having a disagreement. We've all had disagreements with people in our lives. I'm sure we've all left a nasty voicemail at some point in time. Doesn't mean you're going to go kill the person. And even if it was accidental, it doesn't necessarily mean any sort of intent. What is going to need to be found to truly get to an actual conclusion of what happened to John O'Keefe?
I don't think anything that we've seen yet.
Yeah.
Because I don't think there's anything conclusive enough yet. You know, even when you have cell phone data there, there's cell phone drift. There's one data point from what I saw or heard is that the cell phone didn't move the entire time. Then another one on the GPS portion of, or whatever it is, I'm not technical on this, is showing that it had about 80 or 88 steps and then it went up and down. Mm-hmm. But that can also be attributed to cell phone drift. I think it's going to be coming down to who both sides has as experts on that technical side. Testimony will be part of it. But again, it's going to be easy, I think, to for both sides kind of rip apart the testimony based on the amount of drinking that was involved. I did see one congruent thing, though, that I think is kind of interesting, that where I kind of draw the two things together. So the prosecution is alleging that she backed into him and ran him over in the front yard. Mm-hmm. And before that, we know from the video surveillance, there's an immense amount of drinking that transpired. So, you know, no blood alcohol content thing done, but obviously, most likely, a lot of drunk driving involved there. There's another video clip of her backing up out of her driveway to go back that next morning, where defense is claiming that the broken taillight happened when she hit his car in her driveway. Granted, you really can't see that, but you can see it came really close. Mm-hmm. Here's the linkage you could actually have here. She's really horrible at backing up.
That's true.
So could it have been an accident on both sides? Mm-hmm. Yes. I think the hardest thing they're going to have to do is prove, like you said, prove an intent. I don't think there's intent here. How can you have intent when people are so almost blacked out, drunk? It's hard to have intent. So I think it's going to be a really tricky, challenging one. I think it's going to be really interesting when we actually get the data points, when it goes to prosecution, we see all the evidence we don't see yet. Because obviously prosecution thinks they have something more than we're seeing now.
One would have to assume that. I mean, otherwise, I don't know how you're going to prove anything here. And at the end of the day, are we proving an accident? Are we proving something that, you know, she really didn't have knowledge that she did till after the fact? And then with something like that, what are the repercussions if no one intentionally is trying to kill anybody?
Yeah.
Drunk driving, certainly. There should certainly be some consequences for that, but I mean, it's interesting how initially it was charged as manslaughter and went to second degree murder. That's what tells me exactly what you just said, is that they have something we don't know that really shows that, or they believe a jury will believe.
Right. And I agree. That's what it's going to come down to, as always. What are they going to be able to present and compel the jury with to go from manslaughter to murder? As what we know on our side right now, that seems like a stretch, but we'll see when it goes to trial.
Want to listen ad-free? Want advanced access to all of our interviews before anyone else?
Become a True Crime Today Premium Plus subscriber on Apple Podcasts.
You get every episode commercial-free,
so you can binge on true crime
until you can binge no more.
Search True Crime Today Premium Plus on Apple Podcasts now, or go to our podcast page and sign up now.
More of the Hidden Killers podcast next.